Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio. We've got a lot to get to. We've got a great show. So much from both college football and the NFL over the weekend. We got a great interview with Fox Sports insider Jay Glazer coming up later on. But let's get right to it. I'd like to welcome Travis and Joe. Joe, the audio guy. How's the audio sound, Joe? How are we doing today?
Looking great so far. I mean, everything sounds amazing.
Okay, looking great for audio. Great job, Joe. All right, so let's get to NFL week two. And I want to talk about, we got a lot of tweets, a lot of questions about the end of the Denver-Chicago game. And so I just want to set the table a little bit because there's a sequence of plays that take place. Denver is behind. They score a touchdown, and they're going to be down by one, okay? And which I love. Vic Fangio says, you know what? First-time head coach, I'm going for two. I'm going for the win at home, right? Typically at home, you tend to go, you know, I'm going to play for overtime. But no, I'm going for the win. And they line up to go for two from the two-yard line, and they get a delay of game penalty. Play clock runs out. So that penalty now, the way the rule reads is you can have that penalty enforced. The team that's attempting the try gets the option. They can enforce that penalty from the line of scrimmage, the two-yard line, or the line of scrimmage for the other try spot, which is the 15. So then Vic says, all right, you know what? Now, if I'm going to move back to the 7, my chances of making that play diminish greatly. We're going to kick an extra point so that 5-yard penalty is enforced from the 15-yard line to the 20. Does that make sense to you guys so far?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So now Denver lines up from the 20, and they're going to kick an extra point, and they miss it, but the Bears are offside. So again, the team that's attempting the try gets the option. You can have that penalty enforced from the line of scrimmage or the other try spot. So the line of scrimmage was what? The 20. Or the other try spot, which would be the 2. So the 5-yard delay of game penalty doesn't carry over multiple tries. So what Denver then did is they said, okay, now we're going to go from the 2-yard line to the 1-yard line. And we're going to attempt a 2-point try, which of course they got. So that's the rule. The theory behind the rule is you don't want to allow the defense, look, an extra point from the 15 is a pretty accurate play. You know, it's 93, 94% accurate. So you don't want to allow the defense to continue to push the envelope, potentially try to block the kick, not get called for offside. And what's the worst that could happen? We get a 5-yard penalty, we move them up to the 10. They're going to kick from the 10. They're going to make it anyway. So you make that penalty severe to say, no. That penalty can be enforced from the 2-yard line. And now the defense is less incentivized to attempt to push the envelope. That's the theory. I think this will be discussed as a rules change. It doesn't happen very often, but maybe you do something like once you make your choice, you're locked in. So you're going for two, you're locked in. If there's a penalty, you can't go, you know, you can't go to the other try spot. I think that's
like that.
A potential. Because I think a lot of people didn't like the outcome there. They felt that the 5-yard penalty should have been enforced, the one against Denver. But the problem is how many times you're going to carry it over. It becomes a math problem. It gets the argument. One of the things people argue about is the NFL rules are too complicated, right? So you try to simplify it, but it's never going to be perfectly equitable. So what do you want? Perfect equity or you want simplicity? And that's that balance.
Was that the first time that that's happened?
It's the first time it's happened since the try went to the fifth, since we had two try spots. And so I think that always is going to be something now that generates discussion. All right. So then we get into, they get the 2-point try. Chicago gets the ball back. And now they're going to attempt to drive down the field and win the game. You get a rough and the passer called against Bradley Chubb, which there's two Chubbs.
Bradley.
Nick is Cleveland, and Bradley is, okay. So Bradley Chubb gets penalized for roughing the passer, landing on with the body weight. This was a big deal last year.
Clay Matthews.
It didn't look all that egregious. It looked more like Chubb was getting blocked at the time, and the tackle, I think it was the tackle, had his hands on Chubb, and I think Chubb, it looked more like just the follow-through of a conventional tackle. But obviously, look, you can't stuff the quarterback into the ground. The referee felt it was enough, so now you have a 15-yard penalty. And then at the very end, Bears complete a pass. Receiver goes down. He's touched with 1 second on the clock, and then the issue became, did the quarterback, Trubisky, did he call timeout with 1 second on the clock? The crew got together and determined that he did. If you watch the replay, you can see Trubisky in the background immediately signaling timeout as the receiver goes to the ground. As a referee, what the referees are taught in that situation, the pass is complete, you move down the field, and you lock on the quarterback. You stay with the quarterback because you're anticipating, look, you know they're out of timeouts. You know they're going to want to call. You know they have one timeout left. You know they're going to call it at the end of the play. So you stay with the quarterback, and you watch. So immediately when Trubisky signals, the referee should be signaling immediately. And that's ultimately what they decided, that when the signal was made, there was 1 second, and it did look like that was the proper ruling.
Can they pre-call the timeout like in the NBA where they go, right when we get the ball, we're calling timeout?
They can't pre-call. They can say that, and they will say that, but they physically have to signal.
Got it.
They physically have to signal. They'll say, look, we're going to take a timeout, but it's still, you still have to, you know, you obviously can't see me, but I'm doing the timeout signal. And so that's what happened. And then the Bears' new kicker,
Pinheiro
bread, whatever it is, kicks the 53-yard field goal to win the game. I haven't seen a football player that excited after a game. I mean, that was the time of his life.
Yeah, he was happy.
It's, guess what? It's all downhill from here. Okay? It's all, because where can he go?
I mean, he could win a Super Bowl with a kick. But
he could. But this season, he's not going to have, you know, how many game-winning kicks, 53-yarders, is he going to make? He's going to miss a few.
Maybe one or two.
He's going to miss a few. So, you know, we have a big Bears fan in the studio, and he's our Goldie. He's our audio guy. So I got to listen. I'm trying to work, and I got to listen to him, you know, living and dying with this game. So anyway, but that's what happened in the Bears-Broncos game. So interesting situation. Let's shift gears and go to
the Saints fumble.
The Saints.
Do you feel bad for Saints fans?
I do. I feel bad for Saints fans. And I think the Saints are obviously, look, this is three games in a row. And I think this is a situation where, look, this has happened before. You have Jared Goff gets hit. The ball comes loose. Cameron Jordan picks it up and returns it for what looks like a touchdown. And the referee rules the pass incomplete. So they kill the play. They're blowing the whistle. And the theory is there that once the whistle is blown and the play is ruled dead, that you can't advance the football. And so Coach Payton had to challenge the play. It was a fumble. And so the Saints got the ball, but they didn't get the advance and they didn't get the touchdown. And so that's a big play. Look, the game ended 27-9, but that's a momentum play. Obviously, who knows how it would have ended had that call been,
especially with Breeze out,
been correct. But yeah, Breeze goes out and he's out, I guess, what, 6 to 8 weeks now? Is that
Yeah, that's what the report was.
That's what the report.
For sure. Yeah, it's torn ligament in his thumb.
And his throwing hand, obviously, so that's going to be significant. So we lose Breeze and we lose Ben Roethlisberger on the same Sunday.
Both having surgery today.
Not a great day in that regard. But look, that's happened before. The referee, you always tell the referees if in that situation, if you see it and you're 100% sure it's a pass, rule it a pass.
Well, this was the opposite of the Bengals play we talked about last week.
Yeah, exactly. The Bengals play looked more like a pass, and it was a pass, but they ruled a fumble because the referee wasn't sure, and I think that's the philosophy, whereas you don't want to officiate to replay, and you want to rule on what you see, but if you're not sure, let it go, and replay can always bring it back, and unfortunately, this one against the Saints. Look, there's no conspiracy. It just happens sometimes. Sometimes teams are on the wrong end of these calls. Over time, it tends to even out. It may even out during that same season. It may even out over the course of several seasons. But the
Vikings fans say it's karma for Bounty Gate.
Well, I'm not going to go there. That's water under the bridge, Travis. You and your Vikings better, you know, keep that.
Skull.
Keep that, exactly. Travis is a Vikings guy. He's also a Cowboys guy, so I don't know how that works.
We can talk about that another time. We don't have time today.
Let's talk about two plays. There's a play from the Vikings-Packers game. Stephon Diggs catches a touchdown pass. And what does he do? He goes to the stands in the back of the end zone, takes off his helmet, and he starts chatting with the fans in the end zone. So you cannot take, the rule is very clear, you can't take your helmet off as part of a celebration, as part of a confrontation with another player, an opponent, or an official. So that's a foul. It's a 15-yard penalty. What does that mean? That means now Green Bay can say, we want that penalty on the try. Not the kickoff. New rule. So this used to be only one place. You can only put it on the kickoff. Now it's the try. So what does Green Bay do? They says, we want to put it on the try. It's a big play. It's 21-16. The game ends, right? And so this ends up being a situation where the 33-yard kick becomes a 48-yard kick. And what happens? It gets blocked. So what if that was a situation where they had to go for two? What if it's 21-16 late in the game? And now they have to go for two, and Diggs has that penalty. Now you're attempting a two-point try from the 17. That's crazy. And when you look at the percentages, last year, 30-39, field goal, 94%. 40-49, 76%. So, and that's just the 40-49. 48 is going to be below 76%. And so your odds drop dramatically, and that is a big penalty. It's the first time we've seen it in this situation, and I think that's something to look for going forward. And in a critical situation, that penalty, keep your helmet on, man.
We talked about that on the first podcast, which we haven't aired, but before the season started, how big of a deal that could be.
And yeah, we did a test podcast in the off season. Joe's bringing that up, which it's never going to see the light of day. So I don't know why you're talking about that, Joe.
Living
but anyway,
in the past.
Exactly, living in the past. Just always. Make sure the audio levels are correct, and make sure that I'm the correct distance from the microphone, please. Thank you. Okay, so look, I want to talk about the two rules that I don't like. All right, I think the NFL has two rules that I'm just not crazy about. The one is pass interference review. And the other one is the idea that a runner who dives for the goal line or for the line to gain is considered to be giving himself up. And it happened last night in the Eagles-Falcons game. In a big situation, the Eagles were going for two, and they end up losing the game by four. So those 2 points are big. Ruled good on the field, and then they ruled that. So Wentz scrambles. He dives for the goal line. His knee hits the ground before he's touched. The ball is short. Then it's closest to where the ball breaks the plane before he was actually touched. But they ruled a good conversion. I don't think they would have been able to overturn it under the old rule. But the new rule says if you're diving head first, the moment any body part other than a hand or a foot touches the ground, independent of contact by an opponent, you're down.
Is that quarterback only? Or
no, any runner. So for years, the rule was you had to slide feet first. We've all seen it, the sure. baseball slide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you give yourself up that way, and you get defenseless player protection. You can't advance the ball. You can't fumble it. And now if you dive head first, you're considered to be giving yourself up. And that just seems counterintuitive because it's obvious he's not giving himself
sure.
up.
Yeah, you're taking away those exciting plays of reaching
he's
out the ball and
diving.
He's
trying to get into the end zone.
Right.
And that was just – it's troublesome that, look, I get safety, and I'm all for it. But to put a guy down when he's obviously diving for the goal line, it just doesn't seem right. And this happened to the Bengals last year. Jeff Driscoll, the backup at the time, he was in the game. He dove for a touchdown, similar type play, ruled a touchdown on the field. Replay came back and reversed it, and so that's 6 points off the board. And it's interesting. And I would hope that the league would continue to look at that and maybe make a change going forward.
Where do they spot the ball? Where he starts the dive?
So when you dive head first, it's as soon as a body part other than the hand or foot touches, where is the ball? So in the instant last night, I think it was Wentz's left knee, right or left knee. The moment the right knee or left knee touches, where is the ball? That's the spot. And, you know, when he slides feet first, it's where the ball is when a body part, again, hand or foot doesn't count, but shin, calf, knee, once that body part hits, where's the ball? And that's where you put it. Okay, the second rule that I look, it's early, but I just don't like where we are with this pass interference thing. I think we're stopping the game. We're reviewing plays that really seem like very subjective calls. And I think the league has done a great job with when the call is made on the field, they have not overturned one of those. And I think the standard is very high and they've been very consistent. But when the call is not made on the field, I think we're seeing some plays and we're starting to compare them, right? We had a play in Baltimore where the defender played through the receiver's back. It was close. It looked like PI. If it had been called on the field, it doesn't get picked up in replay. But it's not called on the field. It's not created in replay. You know, we had a tweet, you know, even former head coach Tony Dungy, you know, and Travis, why don't you read this tweet? Because I think a lot of people, it's early, but a lot of people are frustrated with this rule.
I think he feels the same way as we do. These pass interference reviews by NFL officiating are not making any sense. Clear DPIs last week not overturned. Clear push off by Antonio Brown does not get overturned, but Minnesota TD gets called back due to blocking downfield. Not sure what the standard is right now.
And look, this is not an indictment on the decision making from New York in replay. This is a tough call. This is a subjective call. You're not dealing with the ball touching the ground. You're not dealing with the foot touching the sideline. You're dealing with contact. Was the ball catchable? Was the contact enough to hinder the receiver's ability to make a play on the ball? All of these things. And I think we're seeing these plays. And I think yesterday there was a great example. You had the Diggs touchdown prior to him taking his helmet off. Mm-hmm. He had another touchdown that was called back because replay went in, stopped the game, and created an offensive pass interference foul on Dalvin Cook for blocking downfield before the ball was touched. And it was confusing because the referee didn't announce the number, and he just said there was an offensive player. Obviously, we identified Cook as the potential foul, but you watch that play and he's immediately jammed off the ball. Then he turns. It looks like he's trying to run a route. He does run into a defender. Is he blocking? Is he just standing there? Is it clear and obvious? And I think these are things that, you know, it's not the intent of the rule. The intent of the rule was to prevent the egregious mistake in the significant situation.
Well, you made a good point yesterday on the air saying that too. You're like, yes, is this pass interference? Yeah, you can argue that, but this isn't the call that we saw in the NFC Championship
game. That's it. Right. And that's where the coaches were at the league meeting. The coaches were, let's eliminate the big game-changing mistake at the end of the game. Let's have the ability to do that. Now we're looking at pass interference calls in the first quarter with 10 minutes to go, and we're analyzing them to the nth degree, and this is, it's troublesome. Because then you look at perfect example, Steelers, Seahawks. You have a play, Russell Wilson rolls out, he gets hit, heaves the ball downfield, two defenders, one receiver, there's contact, pass is incomplete, no call on the field. You have two potential fouls on the play. Wilson gets crushed. Bud Dupree hits him helmet to helmet, leaves his feet, hits him helmet to helmet, clearly a foul. We don't call it on the field. Not reviewable. But we're going to look at the potential pass interference downfield where there's some contact. Was he playing the ball? Was there a grab? We're going to analyze that. We're going to make that a foul for a 38-yard penalty when we've got a potential player safety issue that they can't look at. Yeah, they can find the player.
What if Russell leaves the game with a concussion at that point?
Exactly. You know, it's one of those things where it was just a great illustration of, and I truly believe that if you are going to make these calls reviewable, start with player safety. And you know, the Eagles and the Seahawks, there was a group of teams that proposed a rule in the offseason to make hits on defenseless players reviewable. And I really feel like that is the direction the league should have went and they should look at going forward versus these subjective calls. Look, college targeting is already reviewable. There's a precedent set there. And it's more objective to look at helmet-to-helmet contact, forcible contact versus that little grab on the jersey, did that significantly hinder?
Was it a bang-bang
play?
In real time, that looks like a bang-bang play. You look at it, like we talked about last week and about in the studio, is everything looks like PI in super slow-mo. Yeah. You can argue almost everything looks like PI.
Exactly. And now rules, and I'll say this till I'm blue in the face, but rules are written for on-field officials to make decisions in real time. And now we're administering these rules in replay where you can slow it down and you can go frame by frame and it changes the standard. Okay, moving on. There was a play in the Tampa Carolina game at the end of the game, and we reviewed it for pass interference, and it's just interesting. Call in the field was a catch, flagged down for a face mask. And again, with this rule, it is pass interference as well. If you grab the face mask before the ball arrives, that is pass interference. By rule, it's the one situation, there are very few, but it's one situation where two fouls can be enforced against the same team during the same down. If you commit a personal foul that's also pass interference, then the pass interference is enforced, and then you tack on the personal foul. Okay. So if the pass had been ruled incomplete, then yes, I understand stopping the game and making it pass interference and then tacking on the face mask. But the pass was caught. So all we're going to do is tack on the face mask. So we spent 3 minutes looking at whether that was pass interference when the result of the play was never going to change.
Yeah.
And this is where we're in this mode of, oh no, that's pass interference. We have to stop the game, not even thinking through the ramifications of that. And I think that's where, again, unintended consequence, and I think something that we just have to look for going forward.
It forces all fans to look at these things like we do in the studio. Like we see a touchdown, okay, it's clean. You know, the player wasn't down. He got across the goal line. But was there any flag for pass interference? Now you're looking for it. Now every fan has to do that instead of celebrate the touchdown for their team.
It just diminishes the celebration. It's like VAR in soccer, right? I mean, you watch soccer, the World Cup, whatever it is, the goal is the most joyous. It's one of the most joyous events in all sports. They don't score that much. A World Cup goal is unbelievable. The entire country is celebrating.
But wait.
And now we're going to do the little signal where the referee does the TV signal. And now we're going to look at it. And everybody's like, we got to stop, right? I got to put my Captain Morgan's down. I got to do whatever it is. And this is where we are right now. And it is concerning. Couple of quick things before we shift gears. I do want to talk a little bit about some stats on PI review. We're at 47 total reviews in replay. That's up from 34 through 2 weeks last year. So we're going to see the league is concerned about game time. The league is concerned about game flow. Reviews are going to be up. And of those 47, 16 are pass interference. Historically, the most reviews typically are catch, no catch. Well, DPI, OPI is outpacing catch, no catch 16 to 11 right now. So 47 through 2 weeks, we still got a game to go tonight. That's up from 34 last year at this time. Something to watch out for. We're looking at scoring 44.1 points per game. Penalties are up. Right, penalties are at 19.3 per game, up from 18.8 last year at this time. Penalties will come down. They will come down. It's early. And quite frankly, first 2-3 weeks of regular season, it's extended preseason. Right? How many starters are playing in the preseason? How many teams are really doing
anything?
A lot of
teams are sitting all the guys now.
Are doing anything regular season related, and you know, other than just seeing who's going to be on the roster, putting in the game plans, putting in the offense, those types of things, but they're not doing what they would do in the regular season. So this is extended preseason. It's sloppy football. Penalties will come down. Scoring 44.1, that's down from 47.1 last year at this time. And a margin of victory is at 11.6, which is still kind of high, but I think we have to, you know, again, what's the perfect formula? High scoring, low margin of victory. And I think that's where we need to be. So just some statistics to watch out for. Okay. All right, that's NFL. Now we're going to take a break. This is Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right, we're back. Good calls with Dean Blandino. Now we're going to go to Saturday, Friday, Thursday. They're playing college football. I can't wait for midweek MAC games. MAC attack I can't say that four-letter word. I was going to say another network. But Tuesday night MAC football. Wait, November? I know you're all excited about Bowling Green and Akron on a Tuesday night. I am. All right, so two calls I want to talk about. Let's go to, I believe it was Friday night, UNC Wake. End of the game. Tar Heels are down. Mac Brown is back, trying to win again, trying to turn back the hands of time. It's 4th and 1. Tar Heels have the ball. They're out of timeouts. They run the ball. The back gets a first down. So we know in college, at the end of the down, whenever there's a first down, the clock will stop temporarily, and then it will be wound. End of the game, gets a first down. The runner's progress is stopped in the field of play, and the official rules progress stopped. Progress was stopped with 2 seconds left. He then is driven out of bounds. He steps out of bounds with 1 second. Mechanically, what should happen there, clock expires. Replay needs to stop the game immediately and put time back on the clock, because you can, at the end of the game, if the clock should have stopped, whether it's for a first down, which is a temporary stop, or a permanent stop, like an incomplete pass, you can put time back on the clock. And so when the runner's progress was stopped, you go to that point, you see where the clock was, you put 2 seconds on the clock, and then the offense is going to have to get lined up, because we're going to wind the clock on the ready for play. And it's important, with 2 seconds on the clock, you cannot snap the ball and spike it in college football. You have to run a play. You can only spike, if we're going to wind the clock on the field, you can only spike with 3 or more seconds. So it's important. But ACC came out, made a statement, said there should have been time remaining on the clock. I believe the statement said 1 second, and when the runner was out of bounds. But really, the progress was stopped. The play is over when the progress is stopped. And because of the first down, the clock stops at that point. All right, now one of our games on Saturday. This is the head scratcher play of the week. We're still looking for sponsors, by the way, out there.
Murray's.
Head scratcher call of the week. It's actually the head scratcher sequence of the week. We're expanding. Two plays back to back. Michigan State, Arizona State. Michigan State's down 10-7. They're going to line up for a potential game tying field goal, and they have 12 men in the formation. So anybody out there, look, I get it, but anybody out there that thinks Michigan State lost because of the next call we're going to talk about, we need to just stop and end there. They had 12 men on the field in the formation.
Yeah.
Kicker makes the kick. Officials get together. Center judge actually throws his flag. They pick it up, and then replay gets involved. They make it a foul. So when replay, really, on the field, when you have 12 men in the formation, on the offense, for 3 or more seconds, then you should kill the play. You don't allow the snap. It's a 5-yard penalty. If the play goes, it's a penalty for illegal participation. Replay gets involved and makes it a 5-yard penalty, which is the proper thing, and they move Michigan State back 5 yards. So now we're going to line up for an even longer kick. What happens? They miss the kick. No flags on the field. Arizona State wins. But you watch, and we were watching it in the studio, and you have an Arizona player who's not in a stage. Arizona State player, I keep saying that. I got roasted on Twitter yesterday because I said Arizona instead of Arizona State.
You said that on the air.
But it's the same state, okay? I mean, I get it. It's two schools. All right, ASU player who's not in a stationary position, on the line at the snap, runs up, jumps over the center. You can jump a gap. And there were people trying to argue that he jumped the gap. He didn't jump the gap. He jumped over the center. Clearly above that frame, that's a penalty for leaping. It's a 15-yard penalty. It's going to result in a first down. Obviously, Michigan State would have had another chance to kick the game-tying field goal. The Pac-12 did come out, make a statement, and said that that was that call was missed. And look, bottom line is that's a foul. That's not an easy call. And you have an official in that position who's a side judge who's actually a deep wing official on normal plays. So the deep wing is the officials that are on the sideline in the defensive backfield, side judge, field judge on either sideline. The side judge comes in and is one of the officials responsible for ruling on that play. You don't get a lot of training. You look at how many field goals and extra points during a game compared to scrimmage plays. And so it's a different look for that official. It's a different play. And unfortunately, they missed it. And again, but it goes back to if you don't have 12 on the field for the first kick, it's a moot point. But again, not a great sequence.
One thing I wanted to bring up, too, that you know people on Twitter were asking you, and Brady Quinn came into the cube in the studio and asked us, was why wasn't it leverage as well? Because the guy had hands on.
Yeah, and that's a good
so
point.
Go
so leverage, the college rule is you can basically leverage off an opponent. You could put your hands on an opponent's body and gain leverage, but you can't do it off a teammate. In the NFL, you can't do it off an opponent or a teammate. Okay?
So that's the head scratcher call of the week.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard to snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
So really excited about our guest today. I don't even know what to call him. I guess he's an NFL insider, but he's more than just that. The guy's a TV star. He's a movie star. He's a gym owner. He's a foundation starter. The one and only. But basically, bottom line is he's just another Jagoff from New Jersey. Mr. Jay Glazer. Jay, what's up, man?
You know exactly who I am. There you go. That's who I am.
You know, when I first met Jay, quick story, I was working at the league office, and he came in and did a story on officiating. And Jay, why don't you tell us that story real quick
about two stories on officiating.
Yeah.
I did a real story, then I did a fake story. And a fake story has really got me kind of in with you and a lot of the other guys. So I was working at CBS at the time, CBSSportsLine.com. I get lined up to do a story on the officiating department. And I come in there, and because you saw last week on our show, Strahan dumped Gatorade on me, played a joke on me.
It was the highlight of my week.
He did that because I've lived to play jokes on him and you and everybody else. Like, I live to just crush you guys. So I think, most of America, cheered that finally somebody got me back. So my first ever interaction with Dean Blandino was I go in the officiating department and I write a fake article for CBSSportsLine.com, which was huge at the time. And you couldn't tell it wasn't a real article, right? It looked flawless, just perfect. And how, the officiating department has a fantasy football league and sometimes they'll make, calls on players based on players they're playing that week. And you're right. Then I had one.
We were a bunch of degenerate gamblers.
Gambling,
yeah.
Right? You guys are gambling. Then I had one where you guys decided who gets fined. And, I think there's a quote of, and it was, Michael Strahan this week had a, whatever penalty, but, we like him, so we won't fine him. But, Anthony Dorsett Jr., somebody here had a problem with his father, so we got him $15,000 or something along those lines. So, it's all fake. None of it's real, but it looks fantastic. Like, you can't tell it's not real. And I had Greg Aiello, who at the time was the vice president of communications, the NFL involved, and, nobody else is. He walks upstairs in the officiating department, and he drops these, copies of the article on the table up there. And he's like, what the hell is wrong with you guys? We let this reporter inside and give him access. Is this what you do? And Mike Pereira, right, he was the boss at the time. He starts flipping out. All the, officiating guys in your office start flipping out. And they start pointing fingers at each other. It's like Lord of the Flies are just going after each other. Guys like, I didn't
That's
say
right.
that.
Right? But who was the only one? Who was the only one that didn't buy
it? Right. So the guy's like, I didn't say that. Like, yes, you did. I heard you. Like, they were turning on each other. One person sat there and looked at everybody like, you guys are a bunch of idiots. This can't be true. Dean, I got to give you credit. You're the only one, as the great Stuart Scott would say, you're cool as the other side of the pillow.
That's right.
But everybody else, they crapped their pants.
So that was my introduction to Jay Glazer. So, you know, it's all uphill from there. But, you know, what I noticed about you, what I find so interesting is, you know, I've been to league meetings with you and I've seen you interact with coaches and GMs and owners and other events, Super Bowls, whatever it is. And you have these reporters that are kind of on the outside and they're looking for information. And so they talk to these people, but you're part of it. Right. I see you and you're part of the group and you have these relationships that go beyond a professional relationship in terms of I'm a reporter and I'm trying to get a scoop. And that's what I found so interesting. Was that your approach, you know, in terms of going into this business? Or just talk a little bit about that.
You know, be honest with you, Dan, I'm the same no matter what. Like, love me or hate me, you know what you're getting, because it's just one me. I can't be any other way else. And I didn't play by anybody else's rules. I act this way with everybody because I just genuinely like everybody. That's it. And I'm, you know, I like to play jokes. I like to mess around. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm the only reporter probably in NFL history who gets a day drinking group of coaches and GMs together at the owners meeting. It's 20 GMs and head coaches deep. And I've always said, look, I'm going to, when I started in this business, I walked in that giant locker room in 1993 and I said, man, how could I be different from everybody in here? Because I couldn't be like everybody else. You know, I didn't have the same education, didn't have any experience. And, you know, this is before the internet and like New York is the place to be. And, I looked at it, how could I be different? You know, different is the way you're going to succeed. And at the time, everybody was kind of using their pen as a weapon. I said, how am I going to, I'm going to get relationships. I'm going to build these relationships, and over time through relationships, I'll get more scoops than anybody else. And that's what happened. And thank God. But, and then the business changed. I think it was, I had one person come up to me back then covering the Giants, said, well, yeah, can't beat them, join them. And asking me, well, how do we have relationships with these players? I'm like, if you got to ask, you can't ask.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it was, you know, now you see everybody trying to be friends and same thing, but it wasn't like that when I was doing this. And I got killed, crushed, murdered by everybody else in the media that I wasn't objective because I was friends with everybody. Yet I had more scoops than anybody else. So don't question my objectivity. Look at the body of work. I had more big scoops than anybody who's done it over this period. But now everybody tries to do it the same way. They all try and have relationships.
Yeah, you were really the first one, and like you said, mm-hmm. I've seen it. You are yourself. Whatever the environment, wherever you are, you're going to be yourself, and you always know where you stand. So I've always appreciated that.
We talk about jokes and being me. I have one joke that I do where I take people's phones, and if you leave your phone unlocked in front of me, you're screwed. So I'll take people's phones. And it's a joke I got from Chuck Liddell, who make the story later, show later. But he would take people's phone. Now I've kind of turned into an art. I'll take your phone. I'll text somebody from your phone and then erase the sent text message. So you have no idea what's sent. Anything. I'll text people's wives that they're going to the doctor about certain things.
So nothing's off limits.
The first time Strahan and I meet Gavin Newsom, who's now the governor of California, the first time he left his phone in front of me, I grab it. Michael's looking at me like, are you?
You grabbed Gavin. Wait, you grabbed Gavin Newsom's phone the first time you met him? Okay.
Yes, first time I met him. And I went to go text Bill Clinton because I was like the last guy he was texting. Something, whatever it was. And Michael's like, look at me, don't. I'm like, yeah. And I guess I think we had told him the story beforehand. And so I start texting, and as I text, Gavin Newsom turns around, no, and grabs the phone, like, oh, my God. And he's like, you're out of your mind. You don't even really know me. I'm like, I do now. And we become friends as a result.
That's unbelievable. I would have loved to seen what Bill Clinton's response would have been to whatever craziness you were going to text him. So
and Michael's sitting there like, no, no. He's like shaking his head, no, like shaking me off like a you know baseball pitcher. And I'm like, shut up. He's like, don't do it. I'm like, shut up.
So switching gears a little bit because you have so much going on. I don't know where you find all the time for it, but you ballers, you're Bellator, you have the gym Unbreakable, and I've trained there, and it's such an interesting concept where it's kind of like a, you know, you're in West Hollywood, so you'd think this is a fancy place, but this is a no frills, kind of no mirrors. You go in, but you walk in there and there's everybody from, there's MMA fighters, there's Hollywood A-listers, there's, you know, just regular people that are trying to get better in training.
Tell people who you worked out with there.
So, I mean, I've worked out with Wiz Khalifa. I've worked out with Sylvester Stallone. I've worked out with Randy Couture. I've worked out with so many people at that gym. But it's a great concept and you know, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, you know, you also said there's no mirrors, because what I like to do in my life is build teams. I do that with MMA. I need a team. I need a team to kind of, a team helps me with my depression and my anxiety. That's why I fought. I have a fight team, and as crazy as it sounds, in the cage is where I feel safe, and after somebody beat the hell out of me or vice versa is when I kind of have my most vulnerable talk. So I have this fight team behind me that I'm able to take with me in life, and it helps me with depression, anxiety. So I kind of built that same thing there at Unbreakable. Of, you know, it doesn't matter who you are there. You know, as you get more successful, you become Mr. and Mrs. to everybody, and you mm-hmm. lose it. Mm-hmm. Your locker room. So your tribe. So I try and build a locker room again, and there's no mirrors in there because I don't want anybody's back turned to anybody else on the team. So the mirrors aren't there because of a vanity thing. It's there because of a team thing. But yeah, we put everybody together, and it's a pretty cool little concept. Like you said, you know, your workout crew, you can come in, you have a different workout than everybody else. Everybody gets coached. You don't just come in and work out. So you get coached. And we build this family in there that, you know, at any one point you can come in there and, you know, we had one group one time, it was at 11 o'clock in the morning. And that group was Joe Jonas, Sophie Turner, Dwayne Brown, who was holding out for the Texans, Luke Rockhold, who's the middleweight champ of the world, Chuck Liddell, Wiz Khalifa, it might have been Stallone, I think it was Stallone, Nick Jonas, Roy Hibbert, a basketball player, Milan Lucic, a hockey player.
Where else in the world? Where else in the world are you going to? Where else in the world are you going to get that group together for anything?
Yeah, it's the Oscars and the Super Bowl wrapped up.
It's unbelievable. And the other thing, you know, you talk about building team and helping each other out. You're involved, and you really started with Nate Boyer, MVP, which is, you know, your foundation for returning veterans and merging vets and players. And, you know, I've been to those meetings at the gym, and it's a powerful, powerful experience. And you know, so what was the impetus behind that? And you know, what are you doing now with it?
I was trying to give Nate something to do after he got cut by the Seahawks instead of going back, and, you know, he's going back in the military. I'm like, nah, let's not do that, man. You came out alive. Let's not send you back. But yeah, you know, look, obviously being around football players my whole adult life, after my friends are retiring, I'm hearing them, you know, complaining the same things in the transition. Transition sucks, you know, and, you know, I've trained with military guys a lot, and I've actually trained military overseas and in MMA stuff. And, you know, they come home and they have the same, they voice their problems with the transition the same exact way. It's incredible. It's uncanny. You know, obviously it's a different life, but their complaints are the same. You know, they don't feel, a lot of them won't leave the house. They're like, oh, I'm different. Man, I don't fit in. I'm missing my team. I'm missing my locker room. Man, guys finish up the NFL, they won't leave the house. It's all, man, everybody's asking me, you know, why aren't you a team anymore? They're kind of humiliated. You know, military guys, they finish up, they're combat vets, they come home, and my guys say, well, I don't leave the house either because everybody's asking how many people I killed. I don't answer that. And I don't fit in. I feel like I don't fit in anywhere. And So I'm like, you know, man, I'm starting to hear all these complaints. It was the same complaint. I'm like, shoot, man, let's put these guys together. Let's complain and empower each other together. You know, we understand each other. So I created a thing, Merging Vets and Players. Football players look up to combat vets. Combat vets look up to football players. Let's put them together, give them a new team. You know, when you retire from the NFL, you don't miss your playbook. You don't miss practice. You don't miss the pain. You don't miss the hits. But you damn sure miss your locker room, yeah, your team. Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to do. And you know, again, I tell you, me and my fight team, like for me personally, you know, I've suffered from severe depression and anxiety my whole life. And the one thing that helps me out with it is my team. And I should say my two things that help me are my team and being of service to others. Like, you know, so we sit there on Wednesday nights and we put this group together. There'll be 70 guys there, gals. And, you know, we talk about everything, about why, you know, you should be empowered, why you shouldn't look at it like, oh, man, I used to be great. No, the uniform didn't make you great. You're great. You know, what's behind your ribcage has made you great. And, man, it's just a bunch of badasses empowering other badasses. And we talk about the heaviest stuff in the world on Wednesday nights. But Wednesday nights are the one night in my life that I don't feel depression and anxiety creep in because I am being of service to others.
Oh, it's that, you know, I've been there. It's that sense of community that they yep. have, and it makes it such an unbelievable experience. And I think it's amazing what you guys are doing.
We've had, you know, a group. We started the group with about 10 homeless vets. Guys were, you know, these are guys you would never think were homeless. And they were living in a shelter. There are shelters throughout LA, throughout this country. They're like homeless, like barracks for homeless veterans because they finish up. A lot of them, they got nowhere to go. It's like, and they've made no money, got no credit. Where do you go? The system's really fractured. It's very broken. And it started there and, you know, is now 1,000 strong. We're throughout the country, different cities. I'm really, really, really proud of these guys. But, you know, any one time you go in there and say, hey, how many people in here try to commit suicide? And 3/4 of the room hands will go up. And since they've been with us, they have not tried. Since they've been with us, we've got a ton of these cats through homelessness and homes and jobs and job interviews. And they've helped each other, and they're now being of service to others. They're doing great things. And you know, we've got a crew now. When something happens, we actually deploy these guys and give them a new mission. We deployed in Vegas after the shootings. We deployed in Hurricane Harvey. And, yeah, they're amazing.
No, it's unbelievable. And then last thing, you mentioned Chuck Liddell. And we have a story. I don't know how many years it goes back, but we went out one night. I have a story. We went out one night in Manhattan.
Well, D is a big, huge MMA fan. Chuck is one of my training partners, good friend, and we were going out in New York. This was Chuck's champion. And I called Dean. We're in New York. Chuck's in. Hey, dude, you got to come out with us. Right? So we go out all night long, and somehow we end up with like like a bunch of Jamaican drug dealers. I don't know what the hell.
Yeah, there was. We kept picking people up. Every place we went to, we kept picking up more people. It was like the Pied Piper.
See, that's Chuck. Chuck just collects people. As scary of an individual as Chuck seems, he will hang out with anybody. He is like the nicest guy in the world like that. So he's collecting people, and we're going, and we finally end up with some after hours doing about 4 or 5 in the morning. And go ahead, Dean.
So we walk into this after hours place and a guy comes up to us and he looks vaguely familiar and he's wearing a kind of a weird kind of outfit and he's wearing these shoes, these white patent leather alligator boots. And, you know, Jay thought he was the maitre d', and the guy comes up to us and he was like, hey, you know, Chuck Liddell, Jay Glazer. And, you know, hey, you guys are great. Come on, come to my table. And Jay was hammered. And he's like, yeah, tell the maitre d' to, you know, get me a drink, go to the table. And I'm looking at this guy.
No, I'm starving. I said, hey, somebody tell this maitre d' to get me a table. I'm freaking starving. That's what I was saying.
And I look at the guy and I go, Jay,
tell this guy, I'm starving. And you're like, Jay, it's not the man. I'm like, Dean. And then I start going, look at this dude's boots, man. Oh my God, look at his boots. And he's like 2 feet away from us, and I'm kind of just ragging on the guy and razzing him in a fun way about his boots. And I'm like, can you please tell this guy, ask this guy to get us a table? I'm starving. You're like, Jay, it's not the maitre d'. Yeah. And I'm like, what?
I'm like, it's actually Mickey Rourke. And so It was Mickey Rourke that Jay was making fun of to his face. And then Jay doubles down, right? So that happens. You double down. And he's like, so tell Mickey Rourke to get me a table and get me a sandwich.
And he did.
And he did. And we end up
the best grilled cheese sandwich in the history of grilled cheese.
We end up spending the rest of the night with Mickey Rourke eating grilled cheese sandwiches and drinking mojitos. He's like, I'm going to get you a grilled cheese sandwich and a mojito. And I'm sitting there at 3 a.m. in the morning going, what has my life become? I'm eating grilled cheese sandwiches and drinking mojitos with Mickey Rourke. And Chuck Liddell's doing cartwheels on the dance floor, by the way, at this time.
And by the way, it was only a Monday night.
And it was a Monday night. There you go. There you go.
It's a normal Monday night.
Normal Monday night. So that's what you get when you hang out with Jay Glazer. You can follow Jay on Twitter at Jay Glazer, Instagram. Check out his foundation, vetsandplayers.org, and just you're a Renaissance man. That's all I can say. And,
I'm an idiot.
You're a Renaissance man. You're an idiot. You're all those things. And thanks for joining us today, Jay.
Thank you, buddy. Love you, man.
All right. All right, thanks to Jay. Jay's an interesting guy. Jay has a lot of stories. We could probably talk to Jay for an hour, and we'll bring Jay back, and we'll tell more stories about Chuck Liddell and Mickey Rourke.
And the amount
of name
dropping
is just
egregious.
But that's his life. That's what he does. Like, you literally walk into that gym, and it's Demi Lovato over here and Rich Eisen over here. It's such a mishmash of celebrities and sports personalities. It's unbelievable. So thanks, Jay, for joining us. That's the show. Thank you all for listening. This has been Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio. Check me out on Twitter at Dean Blandino. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.